Well, good morning. I'm going to stand over here. Can you all hear me? Okay. I don't know if maybe.
Yeah, I think they're okay. Recording, so yeah, you sort of have to pay attention to the mic.
Okay. How's that? Okay. So I'm going to kind of go through a progression of research that has happened in this general area. Highlighting from what our group and some others that are closely related have done in response to identified issues that have come up in this topic area. So I've sort of categorized these in terms of research and efforts to understand better sanitizers and the various combinations of these. And so we're going to have some examples of progressions of things through time. This then led to some investigations and product development for appropriate washing aids. Along with this is also a further in-depth look at water quality and the measurement of that water quality and various aspects of that. With a view toward developing better dosing strategies for those sanitizers or combinations of sanitizers, and associated with that, some kind of predictive modeling. How do we know in advance during a big industrial processing run what we need to know and how do we get the appropriate sanitizer there? And then moving on to some processing practices and maybe some newer types of processing practices, and then ultimately to a consideration of equipment redesign and along with these processing practices. So early on, Dr. Lowe and some colleagues at Illinois, they were looking at the inactivation of E. coli 0157H7 in response to chlorine and electrolyzed water and peroxyacetic acid. And what they noticed was that there was this biphasic decline. And so this actually was done on fresh cut apples and cantaloupes. So it's not in the water per se, but this was a beginning look at what was going on here when they're slicing or cutting of produce that had some contaminant, microbial contaminant on it. And then what was the chemical effect? Is it a mechanical effect? Is it a chemical effect? And what do we learn by this? So this was sort of the beginning of some of the later work that followed. Then just as a kind of overall, we look at how do we prevent the movement of pathogens in the water now, from the produce? Let's say it's contaminated, and then you've got some clean produce that's not contaminated, but they're all going in this same bath of water. What is needed to prevent their survival and to eliminate the riskiness of this washing process? So sanitizers and knowing the right amount of sanitizer and knowing something about that water quality and how to combat the ever-changing aspect of this water quality when you're in an industrial process where new material is continuously being introduced, changing that water quality rather rapidly. So the team at Beltsville, which Sunny headed and had many people participating, including Dr. Zhou. He's not here today, but he challenged to keep on going and try to figure out what is actually happening with the total chlorine, the free chlorine, in relationship to the chlorine demand of the water and the chemical oxygen demand in the water. So through a series of studies, he developed this diagram of what was happening with the cumulative loading of chlorine into the water relative to the chlorine demand and the COD, the chemical oxygen demand. Then moving on, after this, the team has been looking at how do you evaluate, what's a good method for evaluating the bacterial and the sanitizer interactions that are happening during this continuous process where the concentration of chlorine in the water is continuously changing, because adding new produce, adding that juicy material that is exuded after the cut is done on the produce. So through a series of studies, they began to look at how does one study this, and there really were not very well-defined methodologies for this. And so this was the first paper that came out by Dr. Tang, and he developed a method that could be used and which has continually been used to press ahead further with his study of the concentration of chlorine in the water during the processing. Other people at other locations, and this is from Michigan State University, have also looked at what happens with the transfer of E. coli 0157 from the equipment surfaces to the fresh cut, because during the process of moving the material through, we know that there are some equipment surfaces that could contaminate it. And so they wanted to know, well, how much of this from just from the equipment, what latches onto the equipment, what stays there, is actually transferred back. And so they actually came up with a very elegant study here, and they identified that initially the shredding operation and then the subsequent conveying and then ultimately the washing, that the E. coli would transfer a very, very small percent from the originally inoculated lettuce that they used to the final product. And this is transfer from the inoculated one when followed by clean one. So the operation can, they looked at each one of the steps, just the shredding itself and then the conveyance and then the washing. So there's a very small amount that actually can get transferred just from the process of touching all these surfaces, even though water is generously used. They did this in a pilot plant, and so it's a good facsimile of what's going on in an industrial setting. I'm following up with the work that Dr. Teng used to characterize what is going on with the components in the exudates that are released from the tissues that are cut, and that when it's going into the water. So what is it that is composing this chlorine demand and the chemical oxygen demand? What about that can we understand as which part is playing the greatest role in terms of consuming that chlorine that is in the water? And we focused on chlorine in here because that is the most commonly used of all of the different sanitizers. So they were looking for which kinds of chemical compound groups, not individual sugars or individual proteins, but groups and classes of these chemicals that are released into the water. So they looked at sugars, they looked at proteins, they looked at phenols, organic acids, and a few other things, just to try to see what is actually the largest component, but which part of those component is actually contributing the most to that chemical oxygen demand and the chlorine demand. So this is actually an ongoing process, about ready to be released to the details of it. But this shows you that the sugar content is very, very high in the exudate material, but the actual portion which is most active in terms of the chlorine demand is actually get from the proteins. So sugars are not reacting so much with the chlorine that's in the water, but the proteins are, and there is some component of the phenols as well. So this gives the initially the first opportunity to really know the which components we really have to pay attention to and use that in factoring how we're going to move forward in taking up this challenge to keep the chlorine concentration as stable as we can, and in terms of incorporating this into some kind of predictive modeling, predictive dosing, and the way to handle this in an industrial level setting. We've been fortunate enough in our laboratory to have an experienced person from Belgium, a visiting scientist, Sam Van Hout, who has taken an interest in looking at novel ways to actually keep track of the chlorine demand. And he took up this study of using the UV absorbance of the water that is in the flumes, if you will, after the cut has been occurred and all the tissue leakage has come out into the water. So he was looking at, can we use anything that we knew about UV absorbance? And some people had published on this prior to this study actually being done. But what about the UV absorbance could we learn and utilize to help us predict? So the chlorine demand that the water has to be adjusted in some way, not just from the very beginning, but as the process proceeds, because the process is, it's constantly adding new exudate, and the chlorine level is varying up and down as a response to this additional organic material in there. So he knew from other studies that the chlorine demand, the maximal chlorine demand, correlated with UV absorbance at 254. But he also, through these studies, found that it depends to some extent on the particular commodity. So looking at cabbage, looking at carrots, looking at lettuce, these are, each one has its own maxima that has to be accounted for, and one can utilize the UV absorbance at the minimal level and the UV absorbance at the maximal level. And so if you access this report, you will see that they using the ratio of the chlorine demand to the maximum chlorine demand can help to develop a predictive type of equation, which is shown here in the bottom part of the screen here, that you're using the minimal and this ratio between the maximum and the minimum to help you determine what will be the chlorine demand. And so in future going ahead, this looks like it has some possibility to be used in a predictive way. But it will take some additional further work. It's not complete yet, and it has to be customized to the particular commodity. Almost there. At our place and with some cooperators that we've worked with, we've also been looking at some benefits of novel single pass type fresh cut wash systems. So that's shown in the upper part of the diagram, where water, which has never been used, it's not a recirculated system as is typical for flumes. That water is used to wash and spray down onto, and I think some of the other speakers will be showing you more details about this. And that was compared to the traditional type of flume. And we look at all of these things like the water quality, how consistent is the sanitizer, in how can you keep that consistent for each of these two type of systems. What does the effect of the organic load have when you're comparing these two systems? What's the microbial content and certainly the shelf life factors? So I think you'll hear more about that in the upcoming talks. The other part of this is once the product is put into the final packaging and delivered to places, there's always a consideration of the cold chain. And so there have been some developments that our team has examined with the display cases. And I think you will also hear more about that sort of thing. But knowing that these open face cases have some challenges, which can be met in part by these using some kind of see-through doors on the display cases. There's a growing interest in understanding more also about the microbial content at the community level of the produce from pre- and post-wash. And there have been some studies by members of our group, some postdocs working with Dr. Ngu, and looking at what happens when you shock the produce with the chlorine or sanitizers, and what is the change in that community composition. So I think we will hear a little more about this as well. So now that I have thoroughly confused you about whether you're coming or going and all the different aspects, I think the following talks will help to clarify this some. This is a shot of the Salt Palace, where we just had the meetings for the International Association of Food Protection. And these were the signs that were out front of that building. I thought they were rather challenging in themselves to see this. So thank you very much.